Blog Talk Radio.
Python Radio, brought to you by Morelia Python's forums, www.moreliapythons.com, which we are days away from the new skin coming.
Relaunch.
To the forum. I'm excited to hopefully, hopefully that will get people excited about the forum again. I think that I miss that, man. I miss it. I miss going there. I miss the community that used to be on there. I don't know about you, but it seemed different back then than Facebook. I mean, the whole Facebook thing, man.
Facebook is that people just want to – it almost seems like the major threads that are always popular over on the forum were the morph thread and the showing off your – brand new, whatever it is, carpet python. So, of course, now we're on Facebook, and people can do that really quickly, and they're already either logged into Facebook from their phone or on it on their computer. So it just seems like that seems to be the quick and easy way to show off your snakes, which is what a lot of people like to do. But what the other part of the forum was the asking of questions and getting an answer from some of the best people in the industry when it comes to carpet pythons, which you miss out if on Facebook unless you are friends with them. You know, if you're not friends with the breeders, they aren't going to see your question. So,
right. Yeah, it's kind of I know that's kind of like the new thing, and I kind of feel a slave to it to a certain extent, because I think that that's where the community is now, and I guess because we do the show, I kind of feel like I have to be a part of it, but at the same time, I just want to delete my account, and, like I said, being away from it for a week, you know, when I was away on the cruise and not being able to, like, I don't know, it just... I discovered this thing on, maybe this is for tech people, this is probably like no big deal, but on my Kindle, I can get scientific papers to the Kindle, right? So one of the cool things about when you have it on Acrobat is you can go in and you can like put little posts and notes and questions. And like, so I read through like 7 papers when I'm not focused on Facebook. And I could really learn about things.
This is what you did on vacation.
Well, yeah, as I'm sitting there.
Your vacation is thrilling to me. Thrilling. Other people go like skydiving and you read scientific papers.
Well, yeah, I mean, as I'm sitting there by the pool, everybody else is reading, the newest crime drama from.
Yeah, you're jabbing your wife and going, honey, look, they split Albertizzi out into a different form.
I can't believe this is an outrage.
I can't believe that shit. I'm so pissed off. What? Why? Maleo Python? The hell
damn
is that? That's a goddamn victory. Yeah, see? Yeah. You know?
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know, but it was cool because, you know, like when you're doing research for the show and whatnot, it's cool to be able to do that. Now I can reflect back upon it, you know, just and different things, and it makes me think. And, you know, I don't know. It was cool to not be – I learned more, I guess. You know, Facebook seems to me,
right,
just like you said at the beginning, it's like, here's a picture. Everybody's like, oh, like, that's cool.
Ooh, yeah.
Or nice.
Oh, amazing, yeah.
Or the two circles with the period in between, and you know
exactly
what I mean?
Exactly. Like, or somebody jumps in and goes, that's why is everyone all about the morphs? And then we have a big, long discussion about how we all hate each other and, you know, stuff like that. So,
I want more, man. I want more. I'm hungry for knowledge, you know. I want the conversation
see,
back.
You want to get back to the basic science of it.
Yeah.
You want to get back to the basic science of it, which is breeding snakes, getting questions, stuff like that. The bad thing about carpet pythons is a lot of the questions that we've had have been answered to a certain extent.
We can breed them in captivity easily. Yeah.
You know, it's not like a Bolin's or something like that where every year you answer one question but pick up five more.
Yeah, so. I can see where you're saying with that. But at the same time, like, you know, here's the thing with that. Well, I look at my females this year.
Yes.
Which, the females that I really fed pre-season, they're all what I would think on their way, if not already gravid.
Okay.
You're looking at five females, and I guess this is true of anybody's collection. There's certain snakes that they baby, you know, or like, oh, you get the extra rat, or you know what I mean? It's like you get the bigger,
whoa.
The bigger rat.
Whoa!
You know?
All right, yeah, there are those animals. I can tell you right now that there are those animals in everybody's collection. You know, you do have your favorites. I mean, you remember when we were talking to Balin, and we asked him what his favorite snake was his entire collection. He said it was his albino.
Yeah.
That may not be true because, you know, of how the season's going right now anymore, but, you know, at a time it was.
Right.
But you're right. There is definitely the favoritism. So what, you're seeing more of a bulge from them?
Well, yeah, I'm seeing them progress more into doing the signs that I've seen from previous breeding seasons to lead me to believe that I'm on my way to having eggs from them. So
are you seeing it earlier than you would have before?
I don't know if it's per se earlier. I'm just seeing closer to what I see with the original season that I did, like my first breeding season. So my thought is that my whole thought on feeding, not feeding, how to feed, I'm throwing it out the window, man. So I'm still learning. You know, because I always feed light, but I don't think you should feed heavy.
Right.
But I do think that – I think the key is that up to a year, year old, you're feeding them a little more consistently, a little heavier – because I think all that food is going towards their growth, you know, and I think you have to back off. But I think with females, come August, you should really start getting them going and pounding the food.
Yes.
And that's what I did with these girls that are ready to go. Some of the other girls that I kind of sat on the fence, am I going to breed? Am I not going to breed? I didn't do that so much. But these one, I knew that I wanted to breed. So I like constantly hit the food. So I guess in a way, it was kind of a good experiment. To see, you know, if that is really something that matters, you know, so.
Right.
I don't know. We'll see. I guess I can't really talk until I have eggs and babies, but so far that's
kind of like all up in the air till that happens. Yeah.
Right.
I just had my first Trelai.
Oh, really?
Yesterday, yes. So.
Cool. Which one?
Yeah. My Caramel Venus.
So we're looking at Super Caramel Jags or?
Super Caramel Jags, yep.
Nice. Very cool.
Yes. Yep. And I still have, I got locks going for other animals, and everybody else is kind of sitting and waiting. So, yeah, we'll see how the season goes. We're still in the thick of it. So
now, I can say that now I don't know for sure, but I thought this would be a good thing to talk about real quick. I have seen in one of my IJs, it's the male, he's in shed, what could be the start of a possible respiratory infection. Now, yeah, I've never had a respiratory infection, so I'm kind of
new. I know.
So here's what I'm kind of noticing. So I know carpets go in the shed. They tend to make kind of noises, and you kind of could be seen as respiratory infection.
Right. They get a little wheezy when they're going into a shed.
Yeah. And I can't figure it out because the temperature's pretty much right in line. I mean, you're looking at like 80 ambient, hotspot 85. I mean, it's no different. Now, nighttime, it was going down into the lowest I got it this year was the 70s. But, again, offering that warm-up in the daytime.
Right.
Funny thing is
that
I did raise him up a little bit heat-wise because I was nervous about it. And here's the thing. I saw when I took him out, he's in shed, but I saw a couple bubbles come out of his mouth. So it wasn't like huge bubbles, and he wasn't gasping for air like, you know, how you see them open mouth breathing.
Right.
So I don't know if I caught it early. I don't know if it was the start of it. But I don't see it in any of the other ones. He wasn't breathing.
Any phlegm or something in his mouth?
No. It looked like his mouth.
Then you caught it pretty early, if not real early, which is, if it is even that, I mean, he might shed and be right back to his normal self.
Right.
So,
I don't know, stress of breeding, because I was breeding him earlier, but I didn't see, like, a whole lot of action. So I quit him early in the season. So we're talking like December. I kind of pulled him out of the breeding lineup and scratched that pairing. But then, you know, I put him back in his tub and just kind of like, you know, let him chill for the winter. And he's always been rock solid, so that's why I'm kind of like taken back. And I know, I guess IJs are the ones that I see a lot when people have RIs. It's usually from them. I don't know why, but again,
yeah.
I've never seen it before. So it's kind of new for me as far as, you know, to some people it's probably maybe second nature, maybe chondro guys. They're like, I see it every season. I don't know. So that's what I did. I raised the temps, but like I said, you would think that, I don't know, again, it's like, do we really know what's going on with the snakes? But I would think that if you raise the temp and the snake wants to warm his core body temperature, that he would go to the heat. It's just the opposite. He's trying to get away from the heat. But, you know, so I'm trying to play
heat
that.
Is gonna be, the heat is what's keeping him warm and dry is what's going to help him. Until it gets to the point where he needs medicine or, you know, you want to set up some sort of with that nebulizer kind of a deal for him. So almost if what I've done in my past, if I had an RI, it was like, well, you clearly haven't been thermoregulating yourself, so you've lost all decision-making purposes in that now your whole cage is 90 degrees. Have fun.
Okay.
So, and it's like, there you go. Now you're going to get warm because you're obviously not doing it right. Because sometimes
did you notice them trying to get away from the heat, or you?
Let's put it this way: I had my zebra male this year. I wanted to see what he would do, and he's a small boy. I mean, he kind of refused food for a while after he got here, and he's been picky, and he was hooked on mice for a little bit, and now we're finally onto the rats, and we're rolling, and I had a smaller jungle female, and I'm like, all right, I'll give it a shot. I'll see what he does. And I put him in there. And she freaked him out so bad, he hid on the side of the cage and didn't warm himself up. Because she pretty much hogged the heat spot. So he got a little wheezy on me, so I pulled him. I put him in the cage, and I made sure his cage got into I think you had a 90-degree hotspot with, like, an 8-degree normal. Like, basically, it's like, all right, you're going to be freaking warm, and you're going to sit. And basically, you just went into summertime. And he slowly but surely came back around, and now he's fine. No wheeze, no bubbles, no nothing. And he's eating again, and he's back to himself. But I did notice he tried to get away from the heat, and I actually had to remove his perch because he stayed up high and wouldn't get warm again.
Okay.
So, you know, I had to remove the perch and pretty much make him go down low. So
Do you think that the snake is telling you that it doesn't want to be that hot? Do you think that the stress will, the stress of not being able to get cool will, because you're saying he came out of the respiratory infection, right?
Yeah, he had a hide box that he could get on top of to get away from the heat. But when he got away from the heat, he was still at, I think I temp gunned him when he was on top of his hide box. He was still able to be at the low 80s.
Okay.
So it was like a comfortable temperature for him. But his hot spot was very hot, and then the rest of his cage was warm. More at the higher end of what would be normal temps, basically. So basically, it's like, listen, there is no cold area in this cage that you can somehow find. His perch went all the way up in his cage, and he jammed himself in the corner, and that was in, like, the 70s. So it was, I don't want him to be there. I want him to be safe and warm and just recoup. So,
okay.
Kind of took away that option.
Hmm.
But he's doing all right.
I would wonder why they would, I guess my question would be, what would cause them to not want to get, if they're getting a respiratory infection because their core temperature is not where it's supposed to be, which I guess allowed for, the bacteria to
grow. Yeah.
Get out of balance. I think instinct would kick in and they would want to just get to that to raise the temperature to keep dry. But
figure themselves out?
Be trying to get away from the heat. You know what I mean? Because you're saying that happened with you and that happened with me too.
Yeah. Some snakes are stupid.
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay.
You had a conversation with them?
Yeah, sometimes you can't fix stupid, and I mean, yeah. So,
is this right temperature for you? How are you feeling?
Okay?
Are you
happy now? No, I want to die. No. It's like the baby snake that's like, I don't like food, but you need food to live, says you.
Have you ever seen a respiratory infection in a young snake?
Yes.
You have?
Yes.
Really? Okay.
Yes. I had a baby rack malfunction, and I had RIs in, like, 8 hatchlings, and it was a goddamn nightmare.
Really?
Because you can take them to the vet, and all the vet is going to say is like, well, you can take a syringe and get a flash of medication, which a flash is... if you were injecting medication into somebody's veins, you look for a flash of blood, which all of a sudden you see a little bit of red, and then you know you're in the vein, and then you push the medicine through. So basically, I could get, like, a drop of medication into a needle and give it to the baby.
Wow. You're talking, like, baby?
Yeah, we're talking baby babies. Baby babies.
Yeah. So, what do you think would cause that?
It was just the temperature fluctuation and the fact that it got too cold. And I didn't realize what was going on with the heating system that I had until I'm like, wait a minute, you're wheezing. Why are you wheezing? And then I started going tub by tub, piece by piece, computer by computer, and I found out that the probe was off and not in the correct place. So I wasn't getting an accurate read. So... it said it was, 80-something in the tubs, but it wasn't actually in the right spot to tell me. It was in a much hotter spot rather than actually where it should have been.
Mm.
So that was the issue there. But, you know, after I adjusted it, after I got it where everything was going the right way, I turned up the heat a little bit, the baby bounced back.
Okay. Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. Everybody bounced back.
I would just think that, you know, like you have, I guess my thought with that is like the instinct is, you know, I'm always the student and the serpent guy. So if the snake is trying to get away from the heat, I'm just trying to figure out why they would want to do that. Like, what is the reason why? Because it would seem to me that they would want to get warm. Is that just us putting human ideas on a snake? You know what I mean? Like, because
well,
when we're
no, you're
sick,
right. And
we want to get warm and I want to snuggle in a blanket.
Exactly. Yeah, but
I really just said snuggle in a blanket. Oh,
you
man,
did.
I'm going to be killed
for
that.
I was
going to
let
that.
You ride on it.
I was
going to let you ride, but then you brought attention to it.
You see how I have to bust my own balls.
Yeah. I mean,
idiot.
I know how you have to get into your snuggie with Coco and your doctor.
Oh, what
but,
an idiot. That's great.
Yeah, that was, yeah. Anyway, you'd think that, and you know, if everything is set up correctly and you have the right temperatures and the snake is of good health, you know, of course you're going to monitor for what is it doing. You know, if it's in the water bowl consistently, what's up with that? Does it have a mite issue? Is it just way too attached to its water bowl? And then when he got to the, is if it's trying to get as far away from the heat as possible, should you turn it down? Yeah. If the cage temperature is fluctuating or if the snake is ill, I am a firm believer in that the temperature should be up a little bit hotter than you would keep it normally.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've
yeah.
seen that before to where, like, you know, keepers always say, like, the first wave of action that you should do when you see that is to raise the temperatures, you know, raise the ambient.
Dry and warm.
Right. So,
right.
I mean, it makes sense. I don't know, just my curiosity.
Well, and you're right. You know, the snake might not like it that hot. But, you know, if he's going to do everything he can because he's uncomfortable to get away from something and not help the situation of him being sick, he's an idiot. And you need to make sure he gets there. You know, my zebra was finding the top corner of his perch to hide in. And it's like, listen, you're not helping me here. You're not going to get any better hiding from the warm. So here.
Right.
You'll get the perch back later.
Right. So, I don't know. It's just something that I'm not really all that experienced with. And it could be just, he could shed and could be no big deal. Life goes on, you know. But I guess we'll
see. And you know what? It's like, and you're right. He could be fine. And it's good on you for pointing it out, like noticing something is wrong immediately. And not
yeah,
panicking.
I mean, yeah, that's one thing that I don't like to do. Is like,
yeah, you're not calling me from Dr. Dennis's office going, ah!
I noticed that from work, right? When I first, one of the things that I learned is when my old boss that I took the job of,
yeah.
When we would have power outages consistently at the place, right? So
right.
Every time the power would go out, it would be like this panic because she would be in such a panic. So everybody else would panic, you know? So I was like,
right.
Damn, you need to just chill out. Let's take one thing at a time. It's not the end of the world. Let's step by step. So when I became the boss, one of the things that when the power kept going out, you know, it would be like we would stay calm, and then I noticed everybody else stayed calm as well, you know. So that's one of the things. You don't freak out, just stay calm, figure out what the problem is, assess it, and fix it, you know. So.
If I came to your supermarket when the power went out and just started, like, grabbing stuff and running, would you stop me?
Oh, yeah, I would tackle you like a son of a
nice. You're like,
I'd
my day has come.
Right into the bananas, man. I'd be like, son of a bitch. Yeah. One of these
I'd
times,
outrun you.
You probably can. But anyway, the one of these times I'll have to show you some supermarket footage of people stealing stuff. And yeah,
yes.
But I digress.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Oh, my God, yes.
It's good times.
That'll be a carpet fest.
Yeah. We'll break it out. So, let's see, what else, Stu? So, how's your season going overall? I mean, are you seeing, you know, just the one is on track or what?
We're on track for a few things. Whether or not we're going to get them, I have no idea. My red tiger female is a huge question mark because she looks gravid, she feels gravid, but she shed probably about 2 weeks ago, so I don't know yet, maybe. That's why I'm not even calling her as, like, a prelay. I'm like, I don't know what you did. So the caramel female is right on track. Venus is like clockwork. Her and Trinity, my coastal, just with my eyes closed at this point. I know what they're doing. I know what they are. I know what they're ready. I know what's going to happen next. Venus just shed, and now she's going to be up front and center for the next 2-3 weeks. And then she'll be underneath her paper. The second I see her underneath her paper, I know she's hiding something from me. So I got to go and find out what she got. Yeah, and she's usually got eggs when she's underneath the paper.
Right.
Trinity's going to be later. She's been breeding with my caramel jag, Lucian, and she's just starting now to get plumper. So, but she's right on the money, always, as always. I'm not sure yet, but I might have high contrast Queenslands. I got that one coastal female from Mo, Carmen, and I bred her to Pyro, my high con. And I don't know yet, maybe, we'll see. She didn't look big enough to me, though, but she's like half the size of some of my other girls, so I don't know. Maybe.
Right.
And then my red tiger has been breeding with my high con tiger as well. I don't know if she's doing anything or not. I just caught them locked yesterday. I don't know if that was more fertilization or just for kicks. I don't know. And then there's the zebra jag who I don't know what he's doing. I don't know if he has any interest in the female. And so I don't know if I'm going to get jungles this year. And the IJ is breeding with everything, but she doesn't look plump enough for eggs. So I don't know what the hell's going on.
The IJ
so I don't know. I'm so freaking close.
Oh, man.
I've caught her locked with two different males, and I'm like, you come on now. Something's got to be happening here. Out of the white lips, I think I got a gold-faced female, and I think maybe a black-faced female, but I don't know, so we'll see.
Remind me again, is the gold, which is the more rare of the two? The red, the gold, or the black?
The black. The black. The Southerns are definitely the more rarer and more desired. The gold phase, because of where they are collected quite a lot and are brought in as either wild-caught or farm-raised. So, you know, obviously captive, born, and bred of either is definitely more on the rarer side, but the gold phase are brought in more regularly as imports.
So you get some white-lip pythons. What's your plan of attack with that? I mean, how are you going to set this project up? What are you holding back? What are you moving ahead with?
I'm going to hold back as many black phases as I deem necessary.
I guess what I'm saying is with the breeding project like that, like what are your – are you going to hold back all females and then try to get males of
No. I definitely want to hold back. Well, the problem is that we have three males, two females, the black phase, and one of our black phase females I am suspicious of.
Okay.
So we might have four black phase males and two and one black phase female. And then, of course, we did just get two hatchlings that are unsexed at this point because they're teeny. So
right.
We don't know. But in the grand scheme of things, I would like to keep a trio, but if we're male heavy, I'll keep three females.
Okay.
And yeah, and then I'll sell pairs until I got no more girls, and then I'll just let single males go. But
so what,
as far as the gold phase, we have three gold phase, and they're monsters. They're huge. So I would like to maybe get a trio of smaller ones.
Right.
Just the easier to manage, for the love of God.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I like the gold ones better, but I guess I can see why the black people are like the black. I guess because it's rare.
Exactly. Exactly. It's rare. We'll sip our lattes and be reptile hipsters.
You're just such a hipster.
I know. The thing is with the gold face, and what I like is that sometimes you get varying degrees of gold, which is pretty. And, you know, we have some that are really, really interesting. Of course, we also have what's called the super golds. There aren't any over here. They're across the pond, which are, you know, the normal white lip, black head, white lips, and then from the back of the head down is nothing but gold. So they're gorgeous. And then, of course, you have the the teenage albino gold phase, and they're very pretty too. So there's different things out there with the golds. Not a lot out there with the black. The only thing that's out there with the black is black.
Black.
So yeah. And of course there are the other phases of white lip. There's the Bennett's white lip, which is actually a red white lip.
Right.
So
I don't know. I mean, for me, if I want a black snake, I'm going Bolens, man. You know, Bolens all the way.
Of course you are, because Bolens is the massive scrub that's black and yellow. It's a giant pura with goddamn jungle colors. So, you know, and they're gorgeous, but, you know, to justify things for myself and Rogue, it's got to be here and it's got to do something to earn its keep. You got to pay for rats, damn it. So, Bolens, I'd be sitting there going, oh, is it breeding?
Well, we could always, like, have people come over your house and take pictures with it and charge them.
Yeah, there we go. That's fine. We can do that.
That way they
can
earn their keep. Yeah.
There you go. See, now I say that, but then there are ones that I keep as pets, so I break that rule all the damn time. So, I just got to try, though. So, the other ones that I'm kind of hopeful for, but I'm not quite sure, are the Mechlets. I don't think I think my female's still a little young yet, so I don't think we're going to get there.
No. I thought they breed pretty small. I don't know. I could be wrong.
I thought they did, too. So you know what? I'll give it a shot. If she goes, awesome. If she doesn't, she ain't going anywhere. We got next year. So, and actually, somebody offered me another female that's about the same size, and I'm tempted.
Right. So when you do a group like that, do you look at – what's your main – are you doing 1.3 or 2.2? Like, where do you focus with that?
I almost want to do it because, like, the main focus is kind of always supposed to be, the carpet pythons. But, you know, you always want to have – we got pulled into the directions of different animals, different things. And what I always said is nothing above a trio. So it was, if we're going to do an offshoot project, there was nothing above a trio. Which that's what we have in a lot of things. I mean, we have, I have 1.2 Savu. I have a lot of the scrubs are, a lot of them are either 1.1 or 1.2, except for the Malukans. And then the White Lip Project is just out of goddamn control. Anyway, but it's just, that's just the way it is. I figured.
Right.
1.2 is good enough to breed, to either get a clutch a year or every other year, and that's fine because these animals I don't expect to sell like hotcakes, and they're not the main focus, so it's okay. And it's all right, we've got to hold on to babies for a year or something. It'd be cool to bring it to a show, and it's something different, yada, yada. So, yeah, that was the whole point. I even have 1.2 corn snakes. So
really?
Yeah. Yes, I do. I have no idea what they're doing.
You know, that's and you probably don't really care. If you get a clutch, cool. If you don't,
I put them in a bin and they were underneath my bed for the past 4 months. And then I moved them downstairs in the snake room because I felt bad. And now they're in a rack at the lowest point in the rack, which is the coldest drawer, because there's one drawer that I can't put any pythons in. For some reason, it just doesn't get warm. And it's at a point in the room that gets cold enough. So I threw the corn snakes in there. They're having a ball. I mean, they're just hanging out. And I'm like, all right, eggs, everybody, good job. All three of them are in there together. So, yeah, I'm not going to pay any attention to them, and I still might get eggs. So,
right. I think if I was, you know, the thing that I always go back to as far as, like, if you're looking at corn snakes, Okeetee, man, that to me is the, that's where it's at with me. I mean,
Okeetees
to me, that's
nice.
The,
I have two albinos in a Miami.
Okay.
What they will make?
No idea.
So, no freaking idea. I'm going to get albinos, and then I'm going to get something. I'm going to get corn snakes. So, and that's all I wanted was just corn snakes.
I remember the time we were at the reptile show. I think it was Hamburg when we were vending. It was like the first time that I ever vended at Hamburg. And, you know, like, okay. We didn't even open the show, and some guy came up and just bought all your corn snakes. It's
all
like,
my corn snakes
off.
And walked away.
Like, what the hell?
I'm like, yeah, all the corn snakes are gone. And you're like, what the hell? I'm like, yeah, they do that. And then you're walking around, you're like, that dude's selling your corn snakes on the table over there. I'm like, yeah, he probably is.
Right.
Probably up the price $20 and letting it ride.
I don't know, man. For me, like, to do that, I don't get that whole thing. To me, that becomes, like, it's more, I guess that's why, like, the whole business part of it would kind of steers me away from that whole thing, because I couldn't just look at them like that commodity. Shit, there's snakes in my collection that I'm like, I want to not get rid of, but they don't really fit into my project, thin out my collection a bit, maybe add some projects that I wanted to do, but it's like, you know, I can't give myself to sell them. I'm like, oh, no, I can't do it. I feel guilty.
Yeah.
I feel guilty.
Yeah.
Like I'm giving up on a kid or something. I'm like, you weren't good enough to make the cut, so I got to get rid of you. I'm like, no, I can't do
it. And I've done that, too, with a certain amount of mine. Like, yeah, I've sat there, and I'm like, you know, if I were a cold-hearted bastard, you wouldn't be here anymore because your kid over there is better looking than you, and you know, you serve no purpose right now, but yeah, hang out. I don't care. But you know, when it boils down to it, the need to fill a slot on a table is not really, it doesn't really apply. Like, it doesn't really appeal to me. Some people run around before a show and buy stuff off other people's tables to sell at their table because they got an open slot. And they don't want the open slot. It's like, that doesn't really matter to me. I've had open slots and displays and crap. It's okay. And doing the whole buy something and then run it to my table and throw it on my table and sell it, you're taking a gigantic risk with that kind of crap. I mean, imagine if you bought something from somebody at a show and sold it on your table. And it goes and it sells and then it dies. Who's on the hook for that?
Yeah,
you sold it to the customer. Yeah,
yeah.
You can try going back up the chain to get the guy who sold it to you or something, but it ain't gonna work that way. So
yeah, I mean, I know that I know when I was away, you guys were talking about the whole show thing and. You know, how, you know, I think Rob was the one that was saying that he respects you for doing all the shows and going out and getting out there. I just, to me, I guess at the same time, I'm kind of like, I don't think I could do that, man. I just don't see myself going in that, you know, to me, it would be different. I would much rather go and give a talk or show off the animals to a group of people rather than go and do it. But, you know, I don't know. That would be more exciting for me.
What makes the show bearable for me are the other reptile keepers and breeders that are in the area that I could talk to. I mean,
yeah, that's fun.
Having my friend Andrew and his monitors and stuff ride the table next to me is cool. Going and
right.
talking with Balin and Howard and, you know, Mo, and then meeting up with a few other people, even making friends with certain people around who do other things, you know, talking with Jamie over at Razor Sharp Reptiles, talking with, you know, I was just in White Plains this past weekend, and the only carpet breeder that was in the building was Jay from Best Poets. So, you know, yeah, Balin didn't do it, and neither did Mike Curtin or Matt LaCrosse. So it was just him, which was all right. I mean, it was cool to talk to Jay, as always, and it was cool to walk around and talk with, like I said, Jamie, and then I talked to a few other people that I know who do other creatures, M&T Exotics. They do spiders and stuff like that. I was talking to them about things, and you can kind of get perspective of the whole market in the different areas of reptile, invertebrate, amphibians, where everybody's head's at. And
right.
it kind of seems to be all at the same place.
Right.
So,
yeah. I mean, yeah, the shows are cool. I think that for me and where I'm geared, it's more towards doing the once, twice a year type of show. And
I think so because of just from the sheer stuff that you would bring. I mean, because a lot of the money that would need to be dropped on some of the morphs that you have would need to be made up beforehand. One.
Yeah.
And, you know, number two, a lot of other people are just going to try to get you to give them the cheapest price for that IJ over there when they don't realize that IJ over there is from two bloodlines and has this, and is deserving of this price, not
right.
the $20 they want to give you.
Yeah.
So that's the unfortunate part.
Know.
And trust me, dude, I deal with this crap, and it's funny. When people are like, I'll give you $50 for that Hi-Con, and I go, no. And they go, I'll give you $60 for the Hi-Con. I'm like, no, he's priced at $100. I've had him for a year now. He's $100. How about
right.
I give you $75 for him? No. How about $80? No. How about $100? There you go. Holy shit,
right.
we got there.
Ding, 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 ding.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, you can read numbers. So, yeah, it's
right.
like, you know, that you deal with that. And there are perks to being behind your own table, because I've had people who were like, I've refused sales to people. I've told people to get lost. I've told people that they can't have it. I've had people counting out bills in front of me going, I'll take that one. I go, have you ever owned a snake before? They're like, no, I just want to use it to scare my mom with. I go, get out. Go away. Go away. I mean, there's various things like that. So it is nice to be able to do that and to have control. But, you know, shows are not, I guess when I started shows and when I was told about shows and from what I saw from shows from when I was just getting into it or was just a keeper, it was you go there to get your reptiles because that's where you can talk to the breeders and that's where you can get the good stuff because
right.
everything else out there is bad stuff. And, you know, you never want to buy a ball python from PetSmart because you'll be paying a ridiculous price and you'll be able to talk to the guy who watched it hatch. So,
right.
And now it almost seems like shows have turned into this is where you can get the cheapest animals. You get the most animals for your buck and you can always sell a bunch of them on Craigslist.
Right.
Which is terrible.
Yeah.
It's not a breeder's show anymore. It's a dealer show. So
yeah, it's kind of like, I don't know, kind of bums me out, I guess, a bit. The stuff that I see, that's why I can't, some of the shows, I can't do it, you know. But, you know, it is what it is. And,
you know,
I do. I respect you guys for doing it because, you know, it does, you know, the flip side of it is that I think about, you know, if you bail out of that kind of thing and you don't get involved, then you're leaving that table, like, you know, just for sake of argument, if there's going to be a flipper at a table or I'm going to be at a table. So if I go to a table, that's one less table for a flipper to be at. And it's kind of like, you know, or whatever you want to call them, a jobber.
Right.
You know, whatever the, whatever terminology.
Someone who buys reptiles at a cheaper price and sells them for a more expensive price if you want to go down that route.
Right.
So, you know, I get what you're saying. It's like, you know, if I were to move out of my table, does that mean that one of the dealers or one of the flippers, one of the importers gets to have 16 tables now instead of 15?
Yeah, right, exactly.
You know, does that mean he gets to bring all his stuff? It's what you got to think about, which is terrible because I can tell you that's exactly what happens. There have been, at this one show that I do, I won't say it because the tables have changed over so much just because they want to get as many people and animals per table that they've taken things away, like the tables that used to sell reptile books. They're gone now. They're filled with people who breed and sell whatever, what have you.
See, that disappoints me because I don't know, man. To me, my reptile library is a big part of my thing. I buy books just because I buy books. I have books that I bought that I don't even read yet. Speaking of which, I just recently bought, we were going to talk about this, but I just recently bought the boa, the complete boa constrictor by Vin Russo. And we'll get into that a little later now. But, you know, to me, that knowledge is you're always expanding your knowledge. And sometimes that outside looking in view can help you maybe hurdle through some problems that you have with the species you're working with. You know what I mean? So just getting
an
understanding and not having that at a show is kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of disappointing.
I mean, I got, what is it, when the complete carbapython came out, I was thinking about ordering it, and then one of those people in the back that sold books apparently had a case of them. And I'm like, oh, holy crap, I bought it, sat down, was reading it during the show. Like, I don't think I sold a single snake because I wasn't paying attention to anybody walking by my table. So it's just, and that was always good as you can thumb through it. And, of course, I've used that book for everything because it's like, I'm like, caramel jags are going to be pretty. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, trust, look at the picture. So it's helpful to have those kind of books and have that literature at your fingertips. And if you're a new breeder or keeper, like, all right, when that day comes, when chondros enter the collection, wouldn't you think my first purchase is going to be the complete chondro?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's going to happen.
I don't know if it's the best book for you to buy, but
it might not be. It's been a little, it's been a while, but you know, I'm going to get it along with other literature as well as, you know, call Buddy and keep him on the phone for 3 hours. But you know, it's those kind of things to get that kind of knowledge and to have something go away to fit another breeder or some dude who's selling metal sculptures or is giving away a basement finishing for $2,000 or something like that is kind of sad.
Right.
So I don't know. I'm kind of hoping that they are it's not what it's going to start going to be. But kind of seems that way.
Yeah. No, don't get me wrong. I mean, The Complete Chondro is a good book. I'm not trying to knock it, but I don't necessarily agree with some of the husbandry or feeding or such that's in the book. But it is a good base to start from.
A good start. Yeah.
Yeah. What I also would probably recommend, and this I got from a book dealer at Hamburg, is Rico's little pamphlet. Cost me $10, but you know, you can't really get it anywhere, but he's kind of got like, you know, it's maybe like, I don't know, 10, 15 pages of his approach to chondros, breeding, keeping, stuff like that. It's like, you know, it's like a care sheet on steroids type of thing.
Yeah.
But, I think the thing that I liked most about the complete Chondro was the first half of the book has to do with localities and some of the history with Trooper Walsh and you know, that kind of thing, which is kind of interesting, you know, to see. See, the other part of the whole thing with buying the complete boa constrictor is I see a lot of similarities between boas and pythons, especially Morelia. That sounded stupid when I just said boas and python. But boas and carpets, I see the two worlds as like there's this locality thing going on. There's the morph thing going on, and it's kind of like you have your people that sit here and you have your people that sit there, da-da-da-da-da. But one of the things that I'm trying to learn is, you know, now being into carpets and whatnot, it's cool to educate yourself about another species because, honestly, when it comes to boas, I'm kind of clueless as far as subspecies, species. Yeah, I've heard the names, but I don't know about them. So my thought is that if I can get in and educate myself, maybe it's going to give me, now being a more, you know, being keeping longer, it's going to give me a new perspective on how I can educate people about carpets and stuff and right. Morelia in general. So, you know, and plus two, I'm curious about the live birth as opposed to the egg laying and that whole process.
I hear it's horrible.
Yeah, that's kind of fascinates me. Like, what's the difference in what you would do? I hear that it's hard to breed. I'm just curious about it. You know, I've heard Vin Russo talk on multiple shows, and he's kind of like a Nick Mutton of the boa world, you know. So,
Well, I've heard that apparently pregnant boa are much more susceptible. Like, you should not, the second you think they're pregnant, you leave them the hell alone. Don't touch them. Don't even look at them sideways. Just leave them alone, or they'll roar. They're quite easy to reabsorb, is what I'm told.
Right.
So, right when you think it's going, like, I can handle my females, my gravid females, like, all the time, up until they're about to lay. And
right.
There's no issues there. They might get a little pissed that I'm touching their stomach, but, you know, there's no danger to the babies or to them.
Right.
Apparently with boa, there is.
So. Okay. Yeah, and just it just kind of fascinates me, which what we were going to talk about a little bit is this. There's a news out now that you can do a test for IBD. And I'm curious, from the python world, if you're going to see more python guys want to get into boas of any sort. Because that, to me, I don't know, to me, like I see boa guys, and I guess they come across, and this could be just my perception, but they come across like the whole IBD thing is kind of like, yeah, it's kind of no big deal. I don't have it.
The IBD thing is one of the scary things. It's like the second something comes out that is somewhat scary or detrimental to a species, you do see a shift of how people keep them or if people keep them. The second Burmese was added to the Lacey Act. You had a bunch of people who sold their berms or decided they didn't want berms, or you know, had other people who bought every berm they could buy because they knew that they were the only breeder now in the state. So.
Yeah.
And it's the way it is. I mean, the second IBD shows up, stargazing has been a problem with boa for years. The IBD thing just appeared in python in the past, like, what, 2 years?
Right. Well, I mean, it's
so
the same virus, you know, I guess.
You start having
python.
Reported cases in python, yeah.
I think
so,
it's quicker to kill pythons than it is boas.
Boa, yeah. So that might be something that gets people worried about it. But, of course, people also get worried about certain types of, you know, people were upset about crypto or people were worried about it. That's why people watch about Indonesian imports and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, of course you have to watch for those things, and of course you have concern about that. And the second those concerns are put to rest, you could see people make the jump to different species. Like, imagine if Burmese is taken off the Lacey Act tomorrow.
Right.
You're going to see an uptick in berm all over the country just because. So
just
yeah,
you can keep them. Yeah, I guess
exactly.
So. I don't know.
Like,
I think.
Imagine if tomorrow somebody found out the rattlesnakes really aren't venomous, they're just big jokers. I mean, everybody would get a rattlesnake.
If they weren't.
I went too far with that one, didn't I?
Yeah, that was a stretch.
Sorry. Sorry. I'll blame my fever. Wheel it back now. Yeah.
He's talking craziness.
Dear Lord.
Yeah, well, I don't know, man. I just, I guess, like, you know, I'm constantly trying to, I think what fascinated me with the whole interest in boas is being down in the islands and kind of like hoping to see a Jamaican boa and see it in the wild. So, I saw some kind of curly-tailed lizard or something in the wild, and I was so jazzed about it, and I don't even really like lizards that much. So
they have legs. You don't like them.
Yeah, it doesn't really do anything for me. I mean, I could watch them. I could listen to people talk about them, you know, but as far as, like, and to see them in the wild is really cool, and their behavior and whatnot,
right.
But it wouldn't be a species that I would keep. It's just not my thing. But, you know, I can appreciate them and their beauty and their behavior, et cetera. But to see that and be so excited, you know, I'm standing there, I'm like, oh, my God, let's check this out. It's like this little lizard. And, you know, my in-laws are like, yeah, okay, Eric, it's a lizard. So what?
It's
you know
a lizard.
What I mean?
The hell's
like,
the matter with you, yeah.
You don't understand, you know. I got my, you know, my crikey,
God,
it's
damn,
a
why
lizard.
Why are none of my reptile friends
you know?
Here?
Yeah. You know, exactly. If I had my phone right now and I put this up on Facebook, people would be freaking out.
Everyone would care. Lots of
yeah.
people would care.
Why don't
I'm
you care?
I'm not crazy. Yeah.
Shaking
yeah.
my wife. Why don't you care? You know, anyway.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
If I'm getting that excited about some little tiny lizard, I can't imagine how excited I would be if I saw a carpet python in the wild. You know what
in
I mean?
In the wild?
I
wouldn't know what, yeah. The problem is, I'd be like, I can pick it up. It's like my guys, and then I get bit in the face or something like that. So I'm like,
so,
I can handle carpet pythons, and this thing just whips around and gores me. Yeah, that's what would happen.
I can't imagine how cool that would be. You know, so exciting and stuff. So I don't know. One of the other things, you know, we talked about this before, but I definitely want to get some herping trips. You know. In going this year,
I'm actually signing up to get my passport because you were like, man, it's gonna be cool to do this, that. I'm like, and I want to go. Shit. So
yeah,
like I gotta get that.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and you know the thing I guess what fascinates me anyway, I was going back to the whole boa thing. Is like the fact of I looked as hard as I could, but you know sometimes if you wander off the reservation too far in Jamaica, you're gonna end up in a stew pot or something, you know what I mean?
Yep.
They're going to
be
taking me
back here. Yep.
Ransom you back. I have the host of Morelia Python Radio. Who's going to
win? We can only give you an albino jaguar. Please bring him back.
Yeah, Owen says.
Yeah. Owen says, yeah.
Eric is gone, and I have the code to the,
oh my
the
God.
Radio show.
Oh, yeah. I would, oh, God, the power that would flow to my head.
Yeah.
Oh.
Anyway, I'm excited about it, and then I come back and I start looking on the internet because I don't even know. To be honest with you, at that point, I really didn't know exactly what a Jamaican boa looked like. But I looked it up.
You were looking for something you had no idea what it looked like.
They're pretty freaking cool, man. You know, all those island boas are badass. Cool
see, any island species of anything just develops to be cool, in my opinion. If it lives on an island, it grows up to be badass.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's true with lots of species.
Yeah. You know, and I don't know, I'm just fascinated. Like, I think about the trip to Costa Rica and, you know, how cool it would be to see, you know, some of those venomous, you know.
Bushmaster, yeah.
Vipers out in the bush. And
Bushmaster, Fleur de Lance. I would take you to go anaconda hunting, but I'm pretty sure you're on its menu. So, I mean, you're a short guy. I don't know. Where's Eric? I don't know. He's splashing around in the water over there. Yeah, he must be playing water polo or something. Yeah,
exactly. So, done. But I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at with the I'm kind of, you know, trying to learn a little bit about it to try to broaden my horizons of snakes and overall. I think the next species that I would try to learn about would be the rattlesnakes. I'm curious about them and how they work. I would never at this current time ever work with them. Yeah, no.
Well, I mean, because there's a lot you have to risk with that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, and you've got a lot to lose and stuff with that. You know, and it's, in my opinion, with the venomous, it is no longer the, you know, if I get bit, it is the when I get bit. So, and I've worked with Gaboon before. And Cobra and stuff like that, they were always the one that brought me kind of some nervousness. What I would like to work with, and it's actually freaky, is I want Gila monsters. So.
Gila monsters? Yeah.
Gila monsters. If I was going to do venomous, I would want Gila monster, because all you have to do is take two hooks and put it behind their armpits, and you can pick them up, and they're, like, defeated instantly. And they're little pissy little lizards, but they're really cool.
Don't they, isn't it with them, they have to kind of chew you in order to envenomate you?
Well, when they bite down, the venom comes from cracks between their gums, between the teeth. So it's not like a hypodermic needle like a cobra or a viper. So what happens is that they bite you down and their teeth cause a wound, and then the venom comes from between their teeth out of their gums and kind of just seeps into the wound that their teeth have created. That's how they get it into you. It's not going directly through the teeth.
Gotcha.
So if you ever watched the milk Gila monsters, they actually have this little plastic tube that the Gila bites down on, and then the venom drips into the tube because they bite down and all the venom comes out.
Hmm. That's pretty interesting. I think, I don't know, I guess if I ever worked with, man, I don't know what I'd work with venomous. I definitely want to work with mambas. What's that one? I think I really dig the color of Russell vipers. I dig the pattern. Gaboons are beautiful. I like them. I've had them in my house before. My dad worked with them. He's also worked with rattlesnakes. I think Eastern Diamondbacks are kind of a cool one for me. But what's the one over in Waggler Eye? Yeah.
Waggler Eye?
Yeah, they're pretty badass.
Okay.
They're definitely a cool band. I think I like the vipers. I kind of dig the vipers more than I dig like the elapids or anything. But
I'm like, I would go for rear fang, like the Baron's rat snakes, whatever, the ones that are, they look like rhino rats, but they're not, and they have they're rear fanged.
Gotcha.
So it's kind of like the, I've been bit too many times in my life to trust myself. So,
I can see where you're going with that.
Yeah, I would just want to be able to, like, give myself a little bit of a thing. You know, the Gila monsters, I think you can be handled and moved and done whatever without touching them, or they can easily be restrained. Raw rear fang snakes, if it bites me initially, you know, I know I'm okay until it tries to work me back to the fangs.
Yeah, so, I mean, if carpet pythons were venomous, I think I could deal with them.
Dead.
But if scrub pythons were venomous, I would be screwed.
Dead too.
That would be trouble, man.
We had the worst time. This Saturday. This Saturday. I was going to go to the car show with my girlfriend, Anna Maria. And we woke up, and I realized that it was awfully cold in the house. Like, beyond cold. And I even asked her, I said, does it seem cold in here with you? And she goes, yes. And now the white lips are in my bedroom, so I have a space heater running to keep them a little bit warmer. And I start walking around and flicking on lights and things like that, and I find out that the power's out. We've lost power.
Right.
Now, we haven't lost power all week, even though some people have.
Uh-huh.
So I immediately start panicking and running around because any normal reptile person has a what?
A generator?
A generator. What doesn't Owen have?
A generator.
Very good.
Right.
So I realize I do not have a generator, so I kind of run around and panic. I call my friend Andrew, who his white throat baby, his white throat eggs are in my incubator, so he has a vested interest. And call him and I say, I'm in trouble, I need your generator. And he drives it down in his truck. And we set it up to get my snake room running, to get space heaters running in the snake room and the incubator and the baby rack. Because the adults will be able to be fine with the space heaters and the eggs will be okay. And then the babies are who I'm concerned about. That's it. So everybody's fine. Generator's
right.
Running. So I've decided that I'm going to need to move the white lips down to the snake room because it is going to get way too cold. I think it was like 20 or something. Yeah, whatever. I don't know how much longer we're going to have power, so I start moving white lips. And they start going peacefully until I reach one of our big females.
Uh-huh.
And she decides that she wants to tear into me on the wrist, so she bites down on my wrist full force. Luckily, Anna's mother had gotten me a watch for Christmas, and I was wearing it. So most of the brunt got taken by the watch, but I have this bruise now that runs down most of my arm from the white lip wound that bit down on my wrist. And oh, my God. It was bubbling up,
wow.
And I'm like thinking, oh, my God, did she, like, nick a vein? Am I going to die here in a minute?
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
If pythons are venomous, I'd be dead 8 times over. So...
Yeah, knock on wood, I don't get bit. I don't think I've been bit in quite a while. But I also don't reach my hand.
You don't reach, yeah. Well, you know, I'm not as bad as some other people that I know, but, you know, hooks are a wonderful invention and should be used at all times, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah.
Otherwise, you're asking for it. Of course, I did try to take pictures of all the babies last week. And you end up leaving there with, you know, urates and blood, and it's stressful for everybody involved. So, but I got good pictures.
There you go. That's all that counts,
yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, if I could keep non-Morelia type of species. You know, the other day I was thinking about what would it take to open up a serpentarium? You know, what kind of, besides money.
Besides money and time, yeah. There's that.
You know,
I mean,
I'm curious as to what kind of loopholes you would have to jump through in order to.
There's different things you can get by means of what is it? You can get government grants for a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, I just think about, I don't know, as far as like, you know, I go back to my original vision of like what I wanted to do when I started keeping pythons. It's like having
every species
type of thing. And then, you know, like I think of all these species that you could keep. And, you know, I think about educating the public about, you know, snakes in general, and not even really going into other reptiles, but just, you know, snakes. For some reason, lizards don't get the same bad rap, at least in my perception, that
if
snakes
they
do.
Have legs, people find them adorable.
Yeah.
If you
like
show people a picture of a baby monitor, they will go, aw. If you show them a picture of a baby snake, some people will get creeped out.
Yeah.
Just the way
I think
rolls.
Of, like blue-tongued skinks, and, like, they put little hats on them, and they're like, oh,
yeah,
you know, look at
stupid hats.
Look
you
at
know
Waldo.
A bearded dragon in a freaking costume.
Yeah.
Did I ever tell you about the first show I ever did?
No.
The first show I ever did, it was a Lancaster reptile show, and I had a clutch of baby jags and a clutch of normals, and they had hatched a couple weeks ago. They were still... You know, they had eaten a few times, but they were still ugly babies. They hadn't shed out to become pretty yet. So I'm there. They're in my brand-new displays, and I'm full of vibrant hope and life because I'm, you know, I'm a reptile breeder now. So the table next to me is these people selling these baby bearded dragons, and sitting on one of their tanks is this bearded dragon in a goddamn jack-o'-lantern costume. Like, it's
right.
A pumpkin with a little hat on it, and it's just sitting there.
God.
And every person comes to look at my snakes, and then they see this stupid bearded dragon wearing a goddamn pumpkin costume, and immediately they're like, oh, and then they run away from my table to the bearded dragon. That little fucker. I mean, I was ready to throw that thing by the end of the day.
Yeah, it's...
Anyway,
I don't get that whole thing, but hey, what do you know, to each his own... But I don't know, like, what would be, I'm curious, I'm looking into it, I'm researching it, because I can't think of a cooler thing. Like, you know, I think about working with reptiles, and I've often thought, like, you know, how do you do that? And the whole breeding thing to me is like, you know, reptile breeder. I think in order to do that as a full-time person and, like, really do it as a business or as a job, like a full-time job, you got to be... You know, you got to be pumping out animals, and you're not really. It becomes just that. It becomes a business,
yes.
And not.
Well, you're exactly correct. To do it as a full-time job, you got to consider the numbers. What can you get? How much money is it costing you to produce these animals? How much money is it costing you to raise these animals? And how much do you have to ask in selling? I mean, because you could sit there and be like, yeah, I'll sell you this carpet for $50, but it took you $80 to get it the way it is. It all becomes a numbers game. So either you can sit there and try to do the numbers game by producing a bunch of babies to offset those selling costs, or you got to make sure you get what you put into those animals.
Right.
So, yeah, it can be difficult, and you're exactly correct. So what I've seen a lot of people do that do this professionally or for a complete business is they have a wide array of animals to appeal to everybody.
Yeah, it's like
they're hoping that.
Yeah,
they're hoping
portfolio.
That. Exactly. So, okay, they can sell their boa constrictors that were just born and have eaten two times for $10 a piece. That's fine all day, every day, whatever. But for their viper boas that have eaten 20 times and been around for a year and a half, they have to get this much for it because it's been here for that long. So,
right.
Yeah. Or they paid this much for it. So, yeah, you at least got to make even on it.
Wait a minute. I think this is probably – oh, never mind. I thought it was a picture of a skink with a hat on it. It's not.
It isn't. Damn.
I thought somebody was sending me a picture of a skink.
Well, there
with
is
a hat
the,
on
there
it.
There are those hog noses that wear top hats, which, you know, of course, the hog and they do have a lovely mustache. I mean,
do you ever see yourself getting into to more colubrids?
Hogs?
Yeah, hog nose or anything
that. Yeah, but here's the thing: if I'm going to get into more colubrids, I want the weird stuff, to be honest with you. I want rhino rat, something bad, and I blame Rob for that completely.
Yeah,
so,
I'd like to work with with Cockseye. I think they're
Cockseye.
Like,
I heard. I wanted Cockseye bad when I first started, but you know, I would. I definitely think Rhino Rats would be cool. I definitely think. I think Hognose would be cool. The Westerns. I mean, I've heard so many bad things about them needing to start on frogs and crap like that. And but I'm not. I don't know if I believe half of that crap because, you know, technically Scrubs supposed to start on bird and a bunch of other crap like that happened. So,
right.
Maybe.
What about as
maybe
far
I would...
as like, do you ever see like, you ever see yourself getting into maybe like indigos or like gopher snakes or anything like that?
See indigos. The problem with indigos is that the rules for indigos change, like state to state and locale to locale, and freaking everything is altered differently. I mean, you know, you can have indigos in Pennsylvania if they're all from, not from Pennsylvania indigos. And I don't know enough about indigos to know which one's which and stuff like that. So I would stay away from indigos. I've heard Caribos are absolute bastards. So I would probably stay away from those too. But, you know, there's, I've had bulls, I've had pines, I've had, you know, king snakes, I've had a bunch of the other stuff. So would I consider them? Probably. I probably would get another pair of king snakes. I like mine.
Yeah, king snakes are cool. I like them. I mean, you know, I don't know. It just it would be like I would appreciate a snake for so you know what is really cool? Just as a side note, did you see the picture of the dragon snake?
Yes. I love dragon rat snakes.
Yeah.
They're awesome looking.
Yeah, they're
pretty, I would love for more and more people to make those. I mean,
yeah.
From what I've heard, there's very few in captivity, and they're starting to try to get breeding programs for those guys.
Right.
But it is, they are gorgeous looking animals, and they just have this cool thing about them. I mean, being an armor-plated rat snake just brings that up to being that cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like when I tell you that, like, I love rough scales because it's pretty much, you know, a pissed off, evil, you know, armored chondro. I mean, that's what makes it cool. So.
Right.
Yeah, I would love for rhino rats, but, you know, I do believe more stuff needs to be done with them and people who have far more patience than I do and far more time and money. So.
Well, I think that's the thing. I mean, like, you know, there's tons of species that I want to work with, but I think when you're not doing it in the capacity that we, you know, that I can do it, it's kind of like you have to pick what are you most excited about? What gets you fired up? And that's why I kind of like, you know, for me personally, Moralia is like kind of the thing for me. But, you know,
right.
I can see why other people dig all these other type of, you know, these species. And I think it's a good thing that more people are working with them and, you know, hopefully refining them and keeping them in captivity. But, you know, honestly, at the end of the day, if I could keep whatever I wanted and had no limitations and as far as time and space, oh, I'd have a gauntlet of snakes. You know what I mean? Because that's just, like, I mean, I would go hog wild, man. I mean, I would try to.
Yeah, if someone wanted to give me a
thing,
rule of
you
know? A reptile. Yeah, I designed several, you know, I had spoken to a few of my, when I worked in the zoo, I had spoken to a few people about designing a reptile house and things like that, and it was definitely something I wish I could have done. I think that would have been tons of fun, because I had it, the way I had it designed, it was going to be species that you'd never see in another place, just because I thought it'd be cooler that way, so.
Yeah, I think, I mean, to me, that would be kind of like, I think of, if there was a serpentarium to where you could go and see these different species of snake, I think I'd be there all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I dig animals and all animals, and I'm into, you know, I can watch nature shows and appreciate all types of wildlife, but, you know, snakes for me just fascinate me, and to be able to go somewhere and see them, you know, on that type of thing. And then the whole thing about educating people, I think that would be like the added bonus. And then
yeah.
to be able to work with different species and whatnot. I mean, again, I don't know. I'm sure that it's probably a lot of legal stuff and a lot of loopholes.
Oh, dear Lord,
a lot
yes.
of, you know, I guess you need land first and that type of thing. But,
yeah, you probably need a land and a building, and then you need all that other stuff. But, you know, what's fun is that the government grants come in with all that other stuff. I remember this summer I went to Reptiland out in Allentown, and
yeah.
they just got a huge grant to work with Komodo. And
right.
they built a gigantic enclosures for their two, you know, basically these Komodo dragons are going to have to grow into their enclosure. That's how big it is. Two Komodo dragons, and then they, like, I guess with the funds, they also built on an addition for their Aldabra tortoises. So it's just this great, huge-looking building with their Komodo dragons and their Aldabra tortoises. And it's got a bunch of education stuff in it and all this other stuff. And it's that would be fantastic to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that would be a dream job for me because, you know, it kind of keeps me focused on the love of the species rather than the business of selling them. But, you know, I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. Maybe if I won the lottery and had tons of money, which, you know, you know, like millions and millions of dollars, absolutely, I'd do it in a heartbeat. That would be my thing. You know, I'd
there
go
you.
Down Florida, I'd open up, get a whole big chunk of land, you know, start building and just pay off whatever politicians I have to.
There you go.
Because that's how it works. No, I'm just kidding.
That's exactly how it works.
No, I'm not. I'm not kidding.
I'm going to leave this stack of $100,000 here and then turn around. If it's
yeah.
gone by the time I turn back, that's okay.
For every bill that you have in this stack represents a species of snake that I'm going to have
yeah.
this bill.
Yeah, that I want to keep, yeah.
yeah. Done. okay. But
that's what I thought.
Anyway, so, you know, one of the things, one more thing that I wanted to hit on before, you know, we close out or anything, and I thought that since you have this, I'm gonna approach this from the, I'm gonna dumb it down and approach this from somebody that's just getting into reptiles or keeping
mm-hmm.
snakes or whatever, I want to talk about thermostats and I want to talk about radiant heat panels versus heat tape. Okay.
Okay.
So I know that you have, you know, I know you work with both, you know, like the. I forget what the name brand of it is, but the one you have on your incubator, the cheaper one.
Oh, I have a Ranco on the incubator.
Ranco. Okay.
And then I have Herbstats on the cages.
Okay. So let's talk about like, what's the differences between the two, like Ranco, what is the, I mean, obviously that's
Ranco,
the same type.
Yeah. Well, a Ranco is technically, it's called the Johnson's thermostat. And
right.
it was, I believe it was built for, you know, controlling temperatures in refrigerators and air conditioning units and things like that. It was built before it had a practical use in the reptile community. So that's what that is. And I used that on my incubator because it was honestly the one I could afford at the time.
Right.
So it works well. It's accurate within a tenth of a degree if calibrated correctly. And, yeah, I've not had any issues with it. Of course, it only has one job, and that is to run the incubator. It's not like it's plugged into a whole stack of cages. I know people that have used them in racks and stacks and in rooms and have had no issues with them.
Yeah,
what I have...
I've used those, and as far as setting them up, like what are you doing as far as setting them up as... You know, is it just as simple as you plug it in, you hit the temperature that you want, you put your probe on the thing and call it a day?
Well, if you get it fully wired, yes. If you don't, you have to actually open it up, splice in whatever wire you want. Now, the wire is what you can plug your stuff into. It's either just a simple extension cord or it's normally a surge protector. So you can do that, and then you hook it all up and you do it that way. The probe, you're all right. You stick it right where you want it to and you let it ride. But also you have to calibrate how many degrees you want it to start clicking on. You can have it set for 88, but have a 2 or 3 degree plus minus, where it won't try to start adjusting things until it's 2 or 3 degrees away from 88 degrees.
Gotcha.
So for my incubator, I have it set for 88 with a 1 degree shift. If it is 87 degrees, it'll kick on until it gets to 88 degrees, and then it'll shut off.
Okay. Well, that's cool.
So that's the whole point, is that it never really leaves the 87, 88 degree range, which is, you know, optimum Python incubation temp.
Right. You're trying to avoid the spike, so to speak, so for the ups and down. Right. Okay.
Exactly. So you avoid the spikes with that. And the Ranko is very good for that. I mean, you know, I've had no complaints. A lot of the incubators I see nowadays are run by Herbstat ones.
Right.
Or vivarium ones. And that works as well. I have a vivarium that runs my baby racks. And that's 2 probes of vivarium, and it is 1 probes in one rack and 1 probes in the other rack, and they each run the racks, and everything's fine with that. And then I have a Herbstat 2 that runs my 2 other racks, my juvie and my adult rack. And I actually had one of my Herbstat 2 actually blew a probe this weekend. It one of my probes fried, so I have to go get a new one. But I walked down to the snake room to this horrible alarm going off, and that was because my Herbstat 2 says the probe isn't working. So.
Okay, so I guess that's another feature of, say, the Herbstat is it's going to alarm when it's not in the
not when it's
which
not
is cool.
Correct.
I mean, that's
the good thing about the Herbstat 2 is that the Herbstat in general is that you can give different probes different jobs. I have all mine set for heat because that's what I need them for. But you can have probe 1 be heat, and you can have probe 2 be humidity. You can have probe 3 be something else. You can set them for different things. And you can also plug different machines into the back. You know, that's just the way it goes. Imagine if you have one cage with a really nice animal, or if you're just doing it just as a setup for, you know, your own purposes just as a pet, and you have a Herbstat too, one probe can be connected to the heat, the probe can be connected to either a misting system for humidity or for a lighting system for UV or stuff like that, so then you can just run it that way.
So you're saying that you can plug I didn't know that. You could plug a lighting system into the Herbstats in the back, and then
it says lighting. I've never done it, and I've never experimented with it. But I think you can do something with it. I don't know what the hell the options are, or where their guidelines are. But yeah, there's different things you can tell. Like there's different parameters you can give to the probes by means of what they watch for, and I think lighting is one of the options, but I don't know what that exactly does. Or is it more of a, it could be more of a timer thing. I'm not exactly sure. Like I said, I've never used it for that, so.
Just using it strictly for temperatures.
Yeah. What I like about them is that you can set the nighttime drop, and when it comes down to it's time to start lowering the temps at night, I go downstairs and I hit the button of click on for night cycle, and then
right.
I set the temp for night cycle, and then we leave.
Okay.
And then you can eventually start dimming it down that way, and it'll set the time of when you want night to start, and it'll gradually bring that temp down, and then it'll gradually bring that temp back up. So it's almost like sun down, sunrise.
Okay.
In the temperatures in your snake's cages. So, and that really only really works with panels, in my opinion, because I have tape in my racks, and then I have panels in my cages.
Uh-huh.
And the panels are the ones that are able to dim down, and you're able to alter how much power goes to the panel and how hot it gets. When it comes to the tape is kind of hard to dim. Tape's like on or off, really.
Right.
So, yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
Which is okay.
So what would be the advantage of having a herpstat 4 as opposed to a herpstat 1? Like, I guess, to
you
me, like, if I have
more
a stack...
probes.
So you have... So why would you not want a probe for each cage? I mean, I guess I could see why...
That's the thing, though. I mean, if you have a herpstat 1, but you plug in a thermos, then you plug in a surge protector into the output, and then you have the one probe going to one cage, it is going to monitor the one cage and then give power to all the cages based on that one cage. So
gotcha.
If you're confident that everything is fine, you can go with a herpstat 1. But
I guess so, like lower cages would be the where you might want to split it to where as
yeah,
opposed to your
you,
higher
you,
cages.
You could have an issue with that. I mean, you know, the reason I chose the Herbstat Force is because I wanted to have probes in various levels of my stacks. So I wanted to make sure I knew what was going on level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4.
Right.
The problem is that my cages are 5 stack, are 5 high, and there are 5, are there 4 stacks? God damn it. They're 4 stacks and they're 5 high. I don't remember.
Right.
So
right.
The Herbstat 4s run on the stack from the second one down. And then there's another random Herbstat 4 that runs all the ones on the top row. So eventually what I'd like to do is make it so it's 5 stacks of 4, but I need a bigger snake room for that.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. It's good to have that, in my opinion, because I don't trust what goes on. I don't really trust to say that all the cages are going to be completely equal and completely cool and completely safe. I would want a
gotcha.
Probe in every cage to know what was going on.
So when you're putting your probe in your cage, how are you setting that up?
Well, we ran it in the back, and we have the probe low to the ground around mid-cage. So it's not directly under the panel. It's not on the opposite end of the panel because you want it to get to the point. You want it to get to a certain degree, and then you want it to shut off. So there is a cooler side of the cage, and there is a warm side of the cage. I mean, directly under the panel is a little bit warmer than what you set it as, whereas the opposite end of the panel is a little bit cooler.
Right.
You also have to make sure you get the right panel for the cage. You know, you can't get one of those 125-watt panels for a 3-foot cage. It'll take up the entire roof of the cage, and that's not going to help you. So, and also what you understand is that...
How do you break down what you're trying to get as far as a panel? Like, what...
The panel
shouldn't even take up...
Well, it depends on the cage, but the panel shouldn't even take up half the cage. It should be like, if you were to break the roof of a cage into 4 rectangles, because most of them are rectangles, if you were to do that, a panel should take up one of those rectangles. Like, we have large panels in our white lip cages, and, you know, it looks, if you were to almost think of it like a Hershey bar, it's like somebody took one of those little rectangles
right.
away, and that's what you're at. So, yeah, that's how big the panel should be, because you have a hot spot and you have a cool spot.
Are you putting it smack dab in the middle of that?
No.
No, why not?
No, it's off to the side. Because they're going to regulate themselves. You want to give them a hot spot. You want to give them a little bit of a warmer spot. You want to be able you want them to get away from the heat if they don't want it. You want them to get under the heat if they do want it. So you kind of give it a hot side and a cool side. And
on
the thing
hot
is
side of the cage. On the warmer side of the cage, on the warmer side of the cage, you're trying to give a hot. So you're doing a gradient. So you're going, say, if you're doing an 88-degree hot spot, let's say,
mm-hmm.
you got 88 degrees right under the panel, which is smack dab against the back wall of the cage. Then you're going to go a little gradual down to 80, I don't know, I'm just guessing, 85.
Yeah, go ahead.
And on the cooler side, you're going down to like 82. Is that your process?
Yeah.
Okay.
Normally 82 is the opposite corner of the panel up front because the panel is usually in the back, corner. So, yeah,
I guess if I would set it up, my thought would be to do it smack dab in the middle because it would want to radiate down so that they have that hot spot on the whole side of the cage, you know, to get to be able to get their whole body underneath that.
Oh, they can get their whole body underneath there. And the other thing is that you got to make sure you put the panels, if you have stacks, you got to put the panels on the same spot throughout the stack. Because the panel will heat up the floor of the cage above it.
Okay.
In that spot.
Would it be feasible to put how do you regulate that? Because you got the heat from beneath as well as the heat from above. Like
that's why the probe. When you put the probe in the back, you put it right around the middle, and then you make sure it touches the floor.
Okay.
That's somewhat near. It's like the panel is in the back corner, and then the probe comes in the middle and is on the floor in the back. So you have the temperature of the air as well as the floor kind of being regulated.
Okay. All right. So I guess ultimately you would recommend going with the Herbstat. Is that if you had your choice, that's what you would go with?
I think the Herbstats are one of the best things out there on the market. With everything, though, there is always room for improvement.
Right.
I've definitely liked ours. They've done quite well when it comes to our guys, as well as, you know, other people that I know who use them who have had no issues with them. I would also, I mean, the Ranco systems, there's nothing bad about those. So... I would just try to shy away from anything that you can get at a Target or a PetSmart because, you know, I always hate it when people spend thousands and thousands of dollars on snakes and then keep it in a sweater box with a human heat pad from CVS underneath it. I mean, it's kind of like, all right, you spent the money on the snake, now spend the money on the other stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how, like, you know, people will spend $5,000 on a snake, but when you talk about caging, it's kind of like, oh, no, man, I can't.
Exactly.
That's expensive, man.
Yeah, I can't swing that.
I'm going to cut corners.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's one of those things where you got to keep the snake alive now, so.
Right. Yeah, the thing that I'm going to do this year is, like, this is the year for me to kind of focus on upping my caging and my whole system. So I think what I'm going to do is I've often toyed with the idea of the, you know, and I know Kerry King and Todd Dyer do this, where they're using those, you know, the Freedom Breeder racks.
I love those racks. They are great. We used to have them at the zoo. And I think they'd be great for carpet python.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give them a whirl. Mm-hmm. I know Brian Barchak, he keeps his stuff in there, and I know some people say you can't keep them in racks, but they're a little bit bigger. I mean, it's not quite as tall, I guess, cage-wise, but
Freedom Breeder tubs are deep. They're pretty freaking deep. They got a nice wall on them. And if you get the ones with the windows in it, it's pretty much like a short cage. And, I mean, most of my carpets don't climb or do anything that would need a cage anyway. So
yeah,
it's just the way it goes.
Yeah, I think I can't remember the size tub, but I researched it for a while, and I know you can get it to where you can custom have it too. So if you have your females, say, in the bottom half, and then your males up in the top, you could do a smaller mm-hmm. version of the tub
right.
up in half, so you could fit more. But yeah, I think I'm going to do that. But I think I'm also going to try to build my own.
Right.
A melamine cage. I'm going to do that for the scrubs and see how that works. And then if I like the Cajun more than I like the rack, then I probably would go with animal plastics or,
mm-hmm.
That type of route. You know, that type of Cajun, not necessarily that, like a 4x2 or a 3x2
yeah.
type of cage, heat panel, all that kind of stuff.
Right. I am definitely looking forward to, doing the whole job hunt, or I'm sorry, the house hunt. Looking forward to getting into a new place and a new reptile room because I'll be able to outfit it a little bit better to what I need and what
right.
I want and
right.
spread out a little bit. And, of course, spread out a little bit means more room for cages. More room for cages means more room for shit. So
right.
I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
Give me some arboreal cages in here and some other stuff.
I think the only thing that I'm finding myself not liking about racks is that the lack of being able to walk into a room and
see everybody,
see exactly what's going on with without opening a tub or that kind
right.
of thing. I miss
now
that.
There's one thing that I like about the Freedom Breeders as opposed to other rack systems out there, and that is if you look at my rack, my 41-quart rack to Natural Spirits rack, I don't think they're even in business anymore. It is run by a couple pieces of heat tape that run down the back that warm up the whole back, and that's what that is. And then
right.
my other rack, it's a black rack, I think it's a Boafile, 32-quart. It's run by
right.
a strip of heat tape that runs down the length of the back, and that's it. So the tape is supposed to be consistent all the way through, but there's no regulation. There's no altering. You can't make those cages near the bottom a little bit warmer because they need to be. That's it. Where with the Freedom Breeders, it's run by strips of heat tape on different circuits that are sandwiched between two pieces of metal. They heat up the metal, and that's what warms the cage. So
okay.
theoretically, you could alter it to get the different strips onto different probes, and you can regulate it that way.
Okay.
So you can have different regulation if you want to.
Right. Huh. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I'm just curious to see which one I like. I mean, the only way I guess I'm going to find out is if I, delve in and see
mm-hmm.
see which one works for me personally. But I think you can definitely keep them in there. I kind of honestly, I like the idea of the whole lighting thing. That's kind of something that I want to try to work with a little bit. And I think the whole thing with radiant heat panel is, for me personally, I think that that's that's the way to go as far as the pinnacle for heating. I think that
I'll agree. Yeah.
I think I think for the snakes, just instinct. I think that I could be wrong with this, but I think the sun. They're even with just Morelia, but the sun is above them, so I think that they would respond better to heat from above. And that could be total bullshit, or just a thought in my mind that I'm thinking that is total bullshit. I guess they're going to go where the heat is, but would that make a difference? In the animal's overall well-being and they're, trying to regulate themselves as far as heat. I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know. I just see.
We kind of point them in the right direction.
Yeah, I just see, like, you know, I guess it's just one more thing towards making it a natural type of environment based off of the animal's instinct. And I would think that, you know, that's what they're doing. But then again, I guess in the wild, they're also, you know, snuggling on a rock that's been heating in the sun. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I guess they could go either way, but, you know.
Yeah, the pits help find the hot spots.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't know. But I guess yeah, everybody that doesn't know, Owen's a little under the weather. So we'll probably, unless you have anything else to hit on, we'll probably.
No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm still trying to keep my throat from closing up on me. So
yeah. I know to talk for a long time when you have a sore throat is not the best thing. So,
oh, dear Lord, the things I do for you people.
So, yeah, next week we have Chris Wolf from Rising Sun Arboreals.
Nice.
You're going to be talking chondros. So,
God, get ready for the phone calls.
Yeah. And not to mention the girlfriend's going to be listening and
shut up.
To take the plunge, you know.
You know, I was talking to my buddy Andrew this weekend, and I'm like, I'm going to get chondros. And he's like, she's convinced you of things, hasn't she? I'm like, no.
Yes.
No.
I love it. That's awesome. One of the things before we jump off is, I know it's not up and running yet, but the whole Morelia Python radio T-shirt thing. Go into, tell us about that.
We are in the process of getting there's something from CustomInc.com. That Custom Inc. does custom T-shirts. It's where I've ordered Rogue T-shirts and things like that in the past. They do this thing. It's called a booster, where you set up that you want to sell T-shirts for a charity or for a nonprofit. You set your goal of how many T-shirts you want to sell, and then they put it out there. Now, people come, they make their orders, and then once you hit your goal, they ship out, or when your charity ends. You normally have 30 days to sell all the T-shirts. Now, we've started one for Morelia Python Radio. They are Morelia Python Radio T-shirts. They are black. They say MPR on the front with a little radio tower. And on the back, they have our full logo with the Ariane J carpet python and the jungle carpet python on the back. It says Morelia Python Radio. Pretty simple, pretty basic, pretty whatever. What it's looking like it's going to be $25 a piece. You buy it, and then you wait for 30 days, and it's going to be shipped directly to you. They may charge you, I think, an extra $5 for shipping, but that's whatever. So 100% of that, of the proceeds from these T-shirt sales, will be donated to USARC. I originally set the goal for 150 T-shirts, but they told me to back it down because they didn't think we were going to sell that many. So I'm pretty sure that's a goddamn challenge, if you ask me. So we are at 75 T-shirts, which would get us $500 to donate to the USARC. Now, I want to get us to 1,500. I want to get us to 150 T-shirts. That would be $1,500 to donate to USARC. And we can go over the limit. There is no you've hit your 75 T-shirts and that's it. I want us to go ape shit on this one. Get it all. Get it going. So it will be up soon, probably in the next day or two. Like I said, you order the T-shirt. We're going to keep going. If this works out, I guarantee you we're going to do more. We're going to do hoodies. We're going to do other Morelia Python gear with, again, 100% of the proceeds going to USARC. So definitely keep your eye on that. I do not know if they do international shipping. They might. That may cost a little bit more. If it comes down to that and you really, really want one, I will order it for you if you PayPal me the money, and I will ship it to you no matter where you are. So we'll work that out. All right?
Yeah, I think the cool thing about this is that, number one, 100% of everything goes to USARC. Number two, basically it's out there. They make the T-shirt. You order it. It gets sent right to you, you know. We don't
the
really.
The size and everything is what you ordered. Everything is fine. We don't have a box of T-shirts sitting here. So
yeah, exactly.
It is all you in know? Your hands. This is
yeah,
fantastic. So
less work for us is good.
Exactly. Holy shit.
Yeah.
So you know, and it's also great because you can flash around your MPR gear. All for a good cause. It's not like you're giving money to me and Eric and put in our pockets. It is
right.
All going directly to US ARC. So,
and they send the money directly to them, or how does that work?
They're going to send the money to me, but I'm
oh.
a trustworthy guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you send it to US ARC.
Then
you.
I send it to US ARC, yeah. I didn't.
Gotcha.
They could send the money directly to the charity, but I didn't have all of US ARC's information. So
gotcha.
I told them just to send it to me, and then I'll send it directly to US ARC.
Gotcha. But,
yeah,
me and Owen, we're not making money off this. We're just trying to find a way.
None
to
at all.
Do our part to support.
We need to have a minimum of. Like I said, we set the minimum for 75 shirts. If we come
right.
below 20, they're going to cancel our entire thing and tell us it's not worth it. So
right.
I know for a fact we can get up to 150 T-shirts, and I want us to get to 150 T-shirts. I want MPR to be the ones who are giving $1,500 to US ARC. So
right.
everybody can wear this gear. Everybody can get a T-shirt. Everybody loves a T-shirt. Come on. So
right.
get the damn T-shirt. It's only going to be it's going to be cheaper than the T-shirt you get from the other player, from the store. So
right.
All
yep,
right.
That's cool. Cool stuff. I guess the only things I have is just check out MorelliaPythonRadio.com. If you have any questions, comments, anything of the sort, hit info@MorelliaPythonRadio.com. Can directly email to us. Let's see, what else? One cool thing. I just want to say this real quick. We're going to be doing something in March. And what we're doing is, we're looking at up-and-coming breeders or keepers or people that are new to the hobby, or maybe they not necessarily always new, but maybe have a smaller type of collection. The guy or the girl that what's the word I'm looking for? Help me out here, Owen. They have the experience. They have the experience, but they might not have necessarily the flashiest.
Right. They have more
from whatever.
Experience,
you know what I mean?
But they're not as well known. They're not as out there.
Right.
They're not just dealing with a certain amount of species. We're looking to talk with the smaller breeders. If you got a small number of projects, if you have a small number of animals, and if you're just brand new getting into this with a small number of stuff, let us know, because we want to talk to you. This is your chance to come on, talk to us, pick our brains, as well as we can pick your brain and try to figure out some stuff for you, and also get out with what has been important to you with your first couple of years of breeding.
Yeah, and I'm looking for somebody that has at least bred at one time, and
something.
You know. Yeah, something like that. Not necessarily. So, but if you think that you have, what it takes to do that type of thing, be sure to send us a message and let us know. But I think that will be cool. I'm looking forward to talking to the newer part of the Morelia world. And get their take on it, because sometimes those keepers or breeders who have a smaller collection tend to be more in tune with their animals,
yes.
they might
also
give some insight.
Yeah. Also, they have the best questions, because they want to know why this is and what this is and what they should be doing and where it should go.
Right.
And it's something that maybe you and I haven't thought about for a while, and
right.
maybe something needs to be revisited, or maybe they had success doing something that we would never have thought of, because
right.
we have our way of doing things.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think that's going to be coming up in March, and it should be – I think it should be cool. But,
yeah.
Anyway, so, yeah, get in contact with us. And the forum, I think I want to say it's the – maybe the 17th, I think was the day when the new skin is going to be on there. I don't know. I know he put up there it was 10 days on one of the posts Sean did. But, you know, go over there, man. If you're posting on Facebook, all I can ask is just post on there too. Try to get the conversation going on there again, and let's get that back to
keep our home alive. Come on now.
Yeah. So show some love over there. And, yeah, that's really all I got. Go ahead, Owen. Take us out.
All right. Before we go out, though, we need to make sure that we play the heavy metal stuff or the outro for Jamie over at Razor Sharp. So get that
metal.
Ready. The heavy metal, the biggest guitar rippinest thing you got.
Okay. Heavy metal. Do you want me to do, well, I could do Eric's heavy metal.
Eric's heavy metal. Do Eric's heavy metal. There you go.
Go ahead.
Okay. Anyway, what I got is this weekend, Rogue will be at the Poughkeepsie, New York Reptile Show. We haven't done this show in a while, and I'm kind of hoping I feel a little bit better before I get there. But it should be fun. It's going to be cool to see. I know there's some people who I haven't seen who kind of live up in that area. And it'll definitely be nice to have a different venue to walk into. Like I said, I did the Poughkeepsie show a few years ago. We took a break from it, but now we're coming back to it. So it should be a blast. After that, the weekend after that, of course, we have the 22nd, which is the Hamburg Reptile Show in Hamburg, Pennsylvania. Definitely come to that one. I assume that there's a show in March somewhere that I'm going to be doing. And I will actually be going down to the Tampa Repticon, which is the weekend of the 16th. So, and that's just as a vacation, but, you know, I'll be mucking around there if you want to catch me or talk, carpets, do whatever. It's going to be a blast. So, yeah, that's all I got. Also, you can go to rogue-reptiles.com and check out rogue at facebook.com. So what we'll say is thanks for listening, and we will catch you all next week for some more Morelia Python Radio. Good night.